During this challenging cold and flu season, supporting your immune health is top priority. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with an effective 1-2 punch from our friends at Protocol for Life Balance. Protocol's abiotic soft gels and Sambucus Black Elderberry Liquid both have vital natural compounds that help your immune system fight what the season throws at you. Go to drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance for more information and to order these great products. That's drhoffman.com/protocolforlifebalance.
Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Layla Mutin, your host. I'm a registered dietitian, nutritionist here in New York City. I practice on a daily basis with Dr. Ronald Hoffman in our new office at 635 Madison Avenue, 14th floor. It's between 59th and 60th Streets, right there in the center of Midtown. Great shopping. You've got Bloomingdale's, you've got Barney's, you've got a whole lot there. It's very cold out. However, New York is fun in winter. And in my opinion, the beach out east is fun in summer. Anyway, I am here today to take your questions. And I've got an email here from Emily. And by the way, the place to send your questions, you can email to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. Emily writes, I value your advice, Layla. Love your podcast. Thank you for listening, Emily. Emily says, I have avoided diabetes for over 10 years by following a low-carb diet and taking finger sticks in the AM only. I seem to be extremely sensitive to carbs at the evening meal, even a sweet potato or a dessert of cheese and crackers will cause a rise the next morning of around 115. Sometimes it really is difficult to avoid all carbs in the evening meal. Even veggie burgers raise my fasting blood sugar. Well, veggie burgers will have a lot more carbohydrate in it than, say, a beef burger or a lamb burger, that kind of a thing. A hamburger is what I'm talking about. So, Emily says, so my question, is 115 to 120 really bad fasting glucose when my hemoglobin A1C is a 5.5? Sometimes, if I eat some nuts before bed, the AM fasting blood glucose will be around 107. Yes, Emily, it's lower because nuts have way less carbohydrate than the crackers with the cheese you're having or that sweet potato at dinner. The AM fasting blood glucose is rarely below 100. I try to eat a small snack an hour before bed, but this goes against Dr. Bredesen's and Dr. Jamie Kaufman's advice to avoid food for 3 hours before bed. That is true. And I'm really not hungry enough for a snack 1 hour before bed. All right, let's break this down a little bit. First of all, you should not have a snack if you're not hungry for it. There is no reason for you to have a snack if you're not hungry for it. And I have to agree with Dr. Bredesen, Dr. Kaufman, for two different reasons. Dr. Bredesen is about low carb, a diet for healthy brain to avoid diabetes, to avoid type 3 diabetes, which is Alzheimer's, dementia, and Dr. Jamie Kaufman for acid reflux, for GERD, for LPR, for all of that, not to be laying down or going to bed soon after eating because that is the prime time to get reflux. None of us should be having a snack before going to bed unless you are hungry for it. Therefore, if you are not hungry for it, don't have it. So Emily, what I would say to you, you're following a low-carb diet, that's great. I assume when you say that you're taking finger sticks in the AM only that these are fasting. Okay. So if your fasting blood glucose is around 115, and that's after having a higher carb dinner the night before, Yeah, that is kind of consistent with that. My advice to you is to, you know, maybe skip that sweet potato and certainly skip that dessert, or make it rare, very, very rare, or share that small sweet potato with your dinner partner. Veggie burgers, as I said earlier, will raise blood sugar. You've avoided diabetes for over 10 years, and I guess that's indicative by your hemoglobin A1C of 5.5. Hemoglobin A1C is an average marker of blood sugar over a 3-month period, and at 5.5, you're not even close to type 2 diabetes. However, the real gold standard, and my question to you, Emily, is had you ever had a 3-hour or a 5-hour glucose tolerance test? That's an oral glucose tolerance challenge where you go into the doctor's office fasting, having nothing but water by mouth, and you're given a glucose drink, and your glucose and your insulin is measured fasting before the glucose drink, and then a half hour after the glucose drink, and every hour for 5 hours thereafter, your blood glucose as well as your insulin levels. This is really the gold standard. So here's the thing. Having a hemoglobin A1C of 5.5 is good. If it was a 5.7 or above, you would be in the pre-diabetes range. You are not. If you were 6.4 or above, mainstream medicine calls this type 2 diabetes. Dr. Hoffman calls it type 2 diabetes at about 6.2. I tend to agree with that. I think we need to look much more closely at blood sugar. And a normal fasting blood sugar should be less than 100. In my opinion, it should be less than 98, less than 96. If you have a fasting blood sugar of 96 or 98, that's pretty close to the upper range of normal. I'm not talking about you right now, Emily. I'm talking to all of our listeners. But you seem to have this phenomenon, or this dawn phenomenon, of having a higher blood sugar in the morning, but that's especially after a high-carb meal. As evidenced by, if you have nuts before bed, that your morning fasting glucose is about 107, which is better. Emily, what I would suggest to you is another test, and it's called the GlycoMark. I had written about this in the Intelligent Medicine newsletter a while back. It's over a year now, I believe. And it's called Hemoglobin A1C versus GlycoMark, a tale of two tests. And you've heard me touting the benefits of the gold standard glucose tolerance test. And a test that we've relied on over the years is the hemoglobin A1C. But we have to remember that the hemoglobin A1C is the marker of average blood sugar in a 3-month period. It's an average. It doesn't show us highs and lows. It does not, in other words, detect variability in blood sugar ranges over the course of days. This may explain the discrepancies that I've observed over the years between an A1C and a glucose tolerance test. For example, a patient can have a hemoglobin A1C of, say, 5.2, which is well within the normal range, pretty close to optimal, but will show impaired glucose tolerance on the glucose tolerance test, indicating hyperglycemia, high blood glucose. The A1C test does not capture this very important information. And that's why I scrutinize the A1C a little more. And I like the addition of this GlycoMark test. Emily, if you want to read more about it, and listeners, if you want to read more about the GlycoMark test, go to glycomark.com, GlycoMark.com, GlycoMark.com. You can read more about it. This test measures a specific molecule in the blood called 1,5-anhydroglucotol, which reliably measures peaks in blood sugar over the most recent 1 to 2 week period. Because it's completely possible to have a normal A1C and still have high blood sugar levels, I am finding the GlycoMark test more helpful in revealing unstable blood sugar and hyperglycemia. And here's a case study to illustrate this. A 45-year-old obese male has an A1C of 5.0, deemed perfect by most endocrinologists, right? But his GlycoMark is 4.9. Now, the GlycoMark test, very different from the A1C. A 4.9 is abnormal because anything less than 8 is abnormal on a GlycoMark. It's almost like the inverse of an A1C, where the A1C is the higher the number, the more abnormal. With the GlycoMark, it's the lower the number, the more abnormal. So abnormal on a GlycoMark test is less than 8. And this 45-year-old obese male with an A1C of 5, which is deemed perfect, has an abnormal GlycoMark of 4.9. This indicates significant glycemic variability, likely due to after-meal blood sugar levels reaching above 180. By identifying recent occurrences of blood sugar variability, this deems the specific specificness of the GlycoMark to be superior in capturing true pictures of blood sugar swings. I would encourage anyone with blood sugar issues such as prediabetes, metabolic syndrome, and diabetes to share this information with your doctor or endocrinologist. Coming back to Emily, you're doing your finger sticks in the AM. I would suggest that when you have a higher carb dinner, you know, one that includes that sweet potato or even that dessert, take your finger stick 2 hours after that evening meal and see what that number is there. You don't want it to go over 140, ideally. That is your mark. You don't want it to go over 140. Anything over 140 would be abnormal. But I would, in the meantime, encourage you to get the GlycoMark blood test the next time that you visit with your doctor. I think it's an excellent test. And it's good to look at, in addition to, along with the hemoglobin A1C. And you know, people will come to me often with a fasting blood sugar. Oh, my doctor did a fasting blood sugar. He says it's normal. It's 90 or it's 85 or it's 96. That really doesn't tell us anything. And Emily, another thing, if you're taking your finger sticks in the AM, do so before you've had anything to drink, even a cup of black coffee. Caffeine can cause rises in blood sugar. So I am assuming here that you are having nothing but water, and that water is not flavored, and you're taking an AM finger stick. But again, I would do it again 2 hours after dinner. Try it with a higher carb dinner, like your sweet potato or your dessert. Not both, because that would truly be high carb. Or you could do that and then measure it against it. And then alternatively, check it again after another dinner, which is low in carbohydrates. Check it 2 hours after the dinner. Conversely, sometime later after a dinner, you could check it 1 hour after dinner. Some people I have seen, after taking a 5-hour glucose tolerance test, their blood sugars, if they are approaching diabetes or prediabetes, metabolic syndrome, all of that, We find that high number at the 2-hour mark, but for a minority of our patients, we've seen that high happen at the 1-hour mark and start coming down at the 2-hour mark. So sometimes I do suggest to patients, if they are doing finger sticks, to, on occasion, take it 1 hour after the biggest meal, like dinner, instead of at the 2-hour mark, and alternate a little bit. See what happens there. Emily, I would encourage you not to have a snack unless you're hungry for it. And I am a big fan of intermittent fasting. In fact, intermittent fasting has been shown to reverse diabetes in 3 people. This was a very small sample size, I know. But a team of scientists behind a small study have claimed that it can reverse type 2 diabetes. They asked 3 patients with diabetes to follow intermittent fasting programs and found that they were able to safely stop using insulin to control their blood sugar levels. This is big. So, you know, those with bariatric surgery, where the size of the stomach is reduced, to be able to reduce the intake of that person, the amount of calories that they consume, right, is one method for treating type 2 diabetes. Not my favorite method, right? Why don't you just eat less, but eat less carbohydrates? These procedures are very risky. You can wind up with deficiencies. I have patients who have had bariatric surgery in the past and now have chronic iron deficiency anemia. This is not the way to go through your life. And researchers in Canada hypothesize similar results can be achieved by cutting calorie intake with fasting. The 3 participants who took part in the study had been referred to the Intensive Dietary Management Clinic in Toronto, Canada, and were each using insulin daily to manage their type 2 diabetes. The participants were a 40-year-old man diagnosed with diabetes 20 years ago, prior to the start of the study, a 52-year-old man diagnosed 25 years earlier, and a 67-year-old man diagnosed 10 years ago. As quitting insulin can cause dangerous shifts in blood sugar levels for diabetics, the team gave the participants detailed instructions on how to monitor their blood glucose during the study. The participants were told to stop fasting if they felt unwell. And on the fast days, participants only ate dinner and were allowed to consume as many low-calorie drinks such as water, coffee, tea, and bone broth as they wanted. They were told to consume lunch and dinner on the other days, meaning skipping breakfast. Patients 1 and 3 fasted 3 times a week, while patient 2 cut their food in alternative days. So by the end of the study, patients 2 and 3 no longer needed their medication, while patient 1 only needed some oral medication. Now this changes everything about the way that we should treat disease. We can treat type 2 diabetes with a free dietary intervention that is available to everybody for free. The amount of savings for the public health system would be astronomical, and patients would be healthier. We're talking about millions of dollars every year. If we can simply spread the right information to the people that need it. It is the ultimate in patient empowerment and the ultimate in savings for public health. So intermittent fasting does work. Emily, I would encourage you to consider it. I would encourage you not to have that nighttime snack. And I would encourage you to try the intermittent fasting. Some people need to have their breakfast, and that's fine. You don't have to fast and have a later breakfast in the morning, say 10 or 11 a.m., after a 15 or 16 hour fast. Say you've had dinner at 6 p.m. the night before. If you want to fast for 15 or 16 hours, that means you don't have breakfast until about 11 a.m. the following morning. What you can do alternatively is have an early dinner, say 4 o'clock, or a very late lunch at 3:30, 3 o'clock, and then not have breakfast again until about 8 a.m. the following morning. That could make it a little easier. Try then doing your a.m. finger stick after having an early dinner the night before, an early low-carb dinner the night before, and see what that does for you. No bedtime snack. It is really, really helpful to sleep on an empty stomach. It is great for those of you who suffer from reflux. You should go to bed on a completely empty stomach, no food for at least 3 hours, and you should be sitting upright after the last meal for at least 3 hours, right? Traditional Chinese medicine actually tells us that we shouldn't have anything to eat as much as 5 hours before dinner time. That could be hard to do. If we're all going to bed at 10 p.m., which we should, that means dinner's at 4 or 5. That's kind of tough to do, right? Or at least you could practice doing that on a weekend. So, pardon me, intermittent fasting is great. It's great for blood sugar. It's great for your brain, eventually. And Emily, I would encourage you to do it. I would encourage you to, pardon me, start looking at intermittent fasting as a tool to lower your blood sugar. I want to thank you for joining me on another edition of Layla Weighs In here on Intelligent Medicine. This is Layla Mutin, RD. I see patients regularly along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.